Hey, good evening and welcome everyone to You Are There Sports. Preview of the Class AAA football semifinals. Hello, everyone. Rick Grammond with you here. You're listening to a live broadcast as we take a look at a big night tomorrow night for the Pierce Pioneers as they head down to the metro area. Park Center High School, the site for the Class 3A semifinal game. 7 o'clock kickoff tomorrow night. I'll begin my pregame at 6:30 tomorrow evening. So 24 hours from now, we'll be at about halftime and hopefully with a nice lead as the Pioneers are taking on the Titans of Tri-City United. Here's what we've got planned for you tonight. We're going to take a look. First of all, we're going to look back at last weekend's big win over Albany. A game that still resonates with a lot of people, and what a big game that was. Two storied programs in central Minnesota, and all of Minnesota for that matter. Piers winning that one 9-0 in the quarterfinals last week. Meanwhile, it was Tri-City United in their quarterfinal game advancing to the semis. Tri-City playing Belle Plaine in their game, and they were winners 41-24, second meeting of the year. They actually beat Belle Plaine 25-13 during the regular season. So Tri-City United, it's just a new school. It's basically only in their fourth year as a school. The districts in Tri-City, pretty self-explanatory, the three towns, they are Montgomery, Lonsdale, and Le Centre. Now, they don't have, obviously, being only 4 years old, a real big history of high school football or tradition, as that school, however, is making its first ever state tournament appearance. It is number 12 for Pierce in the state tournament. Montgomery Lonsdale went to state way back in 1981 as a school when it was just Montgomery Lonsdale, and then the school of Le Centre. When they were on their own, they were actually the 1982 Class B champions. That's when high school football was labeled A, B, C, and so on. And Le Centre was the Class B champion in 82. They also went in 1988, 1995, and Le Centre was the 1999 Class A runner-up. So it has been a while since that area has had a whole lot to cheer about as far as state tournaments go for their high school football team. This is a team, Tri-City United. Well, we'll get into that a little bit. Before we get into Tri-City United, let's go back to last Halloween evening when the Pierce Pioneers took on the Albany Huskies at St. Cloud State University. And this is how it ended. One kneel down. They're at the line. The snap, the kneel, and the time will run out, and Pierce has beaten Albany. The teams are headed to the field. The Pierce Pioneers storm the field. What a football game at St. Cloud State. A slugfest. It is a final. 9-0, Pierce has shut out Albany. And that's how it ended last night, and for it to end, it has to have begun as Pierce came in, ranked number one in the state. They are the champions of Section 5-3A, and their opponent for the first time ever, the champions of 6-3A, the Albany Huskies. They came in a 9-1 record, tied for third with, ironically enough, the next opponent for Pierce, Tri-City United. In the final Associated Press polls, those two teams were tied for third place. So we'll see another number three team tomorrow night, Friday night, at Park Center High. So Pierce and Albany, they go at it, and at Husky Field, it's Pierce that actually gets rolling first after each team actually punts the ball away. Pierce will get their second possession, and they will get started and getting downfield with a strong run by number 22, the senior Johnny Casper.
7 minutes to play. Ball at the Albany 9, 2nd and 8. Left to right. Casper, right side. Goes wide. 5-3. Reaches for the pylon. Ooh. He's out of bounds at the 1.
I thought he had
it. Oh, he reached and he's ruled out. But it's 1st and goal at the 1. Johnny Casper for 8.
So Pierce sitting at the goal line on their second possession of the ball game. Midway through the opening quarter against the Albany defense, and the Pioneers, well, they give the ball to senior fullback number 24, Noah Bozer.
So the Pioneers looking to get on the board. 6:48 to play. Preston Rushlow under center. The snap. Bozer lunges. Touchdown, Pierce! Bozer from a yard out, and the Pioneers are on the board first.
Great job by that Pioneer front. Just getting a surge.
They are working up front. Bozer, his 14th of the year.
I got to correct something I said there. That was actually not Noah's 14th of the year. It was his, actually for Noah, that was his 12th of the year. But nonetheless, double-digit figures in touchdowns for the running back Noah Bozer. So the Pioneers then up 6-0. They missed the extra point, and Albany would get the ball back, and they would finally have something positive to work with, and it came on the legs of their big running back, Kyle Beer. He made a big play to get the ball to midfield.
Nose of the football at the 32. Clock is running. 6:17 to play in the quarter. Pierce up 6-0 on a Noah Bozer 1 yard run. Bone backfield. Beer counter play.
Ooh,
big hole. Big hole for Beer. Beer to the 45. Cuts back to midfield and driven down there by Bozer. And there's the first big play for Albany. 18 yards for Kyle Beer.
So that got the ball to midfield, and Albany had to be thinking that, okay, now we've got something going. We've got some momentum, got our legs underneath us here, and we're starting to do what we like to do. But a couple of plays later, the Pioneer defense came up with their first really big play of the ball game.
This is where Albany wants to be, though. They feel like they can get 3 yards on any play.
And the handoff left side, and a broken tackle. The ball is loose.
Looks like
Pierce says they have it. They do. A fumble and a turnover. Who got it? Nick Harold. Nick Harold with the recovery. That ball came flying out of there, and Harold pops out of the pile, and Pierce gets the first turnover.
So there was a big fumble recovery by senior defensive back Nick Harold as the ball came out of the pile, and Nick fell on it to stop what looked to be a somewhat promising drive for the Albany Huskies. Now, with Pierce getting going, they would give the ball back a little bit later, and the two teams would go back and forth. But as the first quarter ended, Pierce still up 6-0. The Pioneers and Huskies. Battle of defenses, as we expected, and it turned out to be as they slugged away at each other. And again, it was the Pierce defense coming up with another big play when Albany seemed to be putting something together on offense.
The sweep toss that time went to Gabe Hawkinson.
Ooh, a little shovel.
Shovel pass. No, the ball
again.
Might be loose again. Pioneers say they have it. No signal. No signal yet, but the Pioneers.
They do.
Pierce has the football back. I think Casper got it. And a second fumble recovered by Pierce. And this is at the Albany 40.
I was wrong. It was Logan Stangle that fell on that football. Not Johnny, but Stangle recovered that fumble to give Pierce excellent field position against Albany. And the Pioneers would go to work. Now, at this point in the ball game, it was starting to get late in the second quarter. Pierce still holding that 6-0 lead. And to get the ball further downfield, They would hand the ball off to junior running back Lane Gertz.
Second and nine, Schlegel in the backfield to the left of Bozer. Gertz to the right, Casper to the left. Lane comes in motion, gets the handoff from Bozer.
Nice,
nice hole for Gertz.
Ooh.
Bounces off a man.
Wow.
Gertz still going to the 20. Gertz to the 19. What a run by the junior Lane Gertz.
He ran that safety right over.
He barreled over the safety.
So the Pioneers were now in the red zone, trying to punch in what could be a very big score late in the quarter as the Pioneers were driving on the Albany defense, still up 6-0. Now, earlier, the Pioneers had it down in the red zone again, and they had gone for it on fourth down at about less than a yard and were stopped as the Albany defense rose up and made a stand deep in their territory. But this time, the coaching staff sent their field goal unit on late in the second quarter to the scoreboard end. And it wasn't Lane Gertz who kicked the field goal in the snow against Rochester Lourdes in the semis last fall. No, it was Preston Rushlow.
We're going to likely see Lane Gertz attempt a field goal.
I think Rushlow's in.
Is Preston going to kick it?
Yep.
All right. Well, it was Lane in the snow in the state semifinals that drilled one right before halftime to this end of the field. It is going to be a field goal coming up. Weber is putting the kicking tee down at the 12. This will be a 22-yard attempt for sophomore Preston Rushlow. Caps or snap. Weber hold. Kick is on the way. It is good. Rushlow with a 22-yard field goal, and Pierce takes a 9-0 lead.
And that was an absolutely big play and big turning point in the game. It put Pierce up by two scores, even with a touchdown and a two-point conversion. Now for Albany, they were going to be forced to have to score twice against the Pioneer defense. And that was a tough task. They hadn't had any success so far. But the half was not over. Preston's field goal came with a minute 20 left, and Albany had all three of their timeouts. Lane Gertz, on the ensuing kickoff following the field goal, kicked it through the end zone for a touchback, so Albany would have the ball at their 20, needing 80 yards of real estate to go with all three of their timeouts. They were not done. They were not going to be sitting on just a 9-0 deficit. They were going to try and get something going, get some points on the board, and they did. They moved downfield, and they put themselves in position to score late in the half, but a very key penalty took some points off the board as Albany, a power-running football team, put one up in the air.
All right, Albany has used all of their timeouts. 14 seconds left until half. Pierce 9, Albany nothing. The ball is just inside the 29. Second down and 8. Shotgun for 4A. Low snap, picks it up. Looking deep. He's looking end zone. Casper's back there. Oh, and they're going to be, there's interference, but this might be offense.
Yeah, this is coming back. This is definite pass interference.
Casper got thrown to the side by the receiver. This is going to be offensive interference, I believe. I think this is going to be on Albany.
Has to be. He threw Johnny right to the
Johnny
ground.
Got thrown to the turf. Here's the call. Interference, Albany! Take 6 off the board.
So that left the score at 9-0 in favor of Pierce, but still, Albany, remember that was a second down play. So they were penalized on the offensive interference, and they would take one last crack at a trick play, but the Pioneers were ready.
15-yard penalty.
Pierce will just be in a pre.
And that's also here. Loss of down. It should be on offensive interference is loss of down. It should be third down. But I think it's going to be a moot point. They're going to throw again.
Hook and ladder again.
And taken down after a short gain is Beer. But that's going to end the half. We are at halftime. And look at Danny Sayre, the defensive coordinator. He is fired up. The Pioneers and Albany Huskies leave the field at halftime. It's the Pioneers 9, the Huskies nothing.
And it was a 9-0 halftime lead as the teams left Husky Field. As the Pioneers, with the early touchdown from Noah Bozer and the late second quarter field goal by Preston Rushlow, had the two-score lead. Now, Albany would get the ball to start the second half with the kickoff because they kicked off to start the ball game. So Albany would take the ball, opening the third quarter, and they would begin to just grind down the field. Very methodical, just chewing off chunks of yardage. Their best drive, keeping the Pioneer defense on the field for 75% of the third quarter as Albany just marched downfield. Part of the way downfield, they were facing a fourth down and long, and Coach Mike Kleinschmidt reached in deep into the Albany playbook near midfield. As the Pioneers were set back to return a punt, but Coach Kleinschmidt had something else in mind. And Huskies do drop back to punt from about the 28. Snap is back. And they fake. They're running it out of the punt formation, and he is going to get it. Yep. It's Wolf still on his feet and out of bounds at the 50. Fake punt results in an Albany first. He got outside containment, and Alex Wolf picks up the first, a gain of 11. So Albany had the ball at midfield, and that long third quarter drive continued from midfield. And again, Pioneers defense on their heels, and they were pushed back near their goal line again. But as Albany gave the ball to their top runner, Kyle Beer, another flag came out. Actually, third and closer to two than it is to one. They're at about the 11. They need the 9. I would think it's definitely four down territory for Albany. This drive has consumed. Now we're down to 4:45 to go in the third. They got the ball, and Pierce has been on defense this entire quarter. Here we go. Third down and a long one. Sweep toss for the left side.
Got
Beer.
An edge.
Got the edge. Casper closing.
Oh, penalty. Penalty.
Penalty coming up. There is a flag down at the 5.
There Beer, might be a hold there.
Beer got into the end zone, but there is a flag on the play. Flag on the play at the 5. He got the left edge, but did he get help? Let's see. Holding Albany. Wipe out a touchdown.
Twice now they've been in the end zone, but a penalty has negated it.
A huge holding call at the 5. So another touchdown taken off the board for the Albany offense as the Pioneers had to stop Albany one more time following that holding call as Taylor Foray, injured ankle and all, led his Huskies up to the line of scrimmage trying to punch one in against the Pioneer defense. Fourth down. They need to get to the 9. They're at the 13. Here we go, folks. Huge play. Foray rolling left, looking, chased out of the pocket. He's in pressure. Foray will not get there. They held him. Foray is stopped. And Piers will take over on downs.
What a play.
They got pressure. And Foray got to the 14. He ends up losing a yard. Absolutely huge stop. So that was the first stop in the red zone in the second half for the Pioneer defense. It would not be the last as the Pioneers couldn't get much going on offense as they had to give the ball back to Albany. And Albany again moved downfield and put themselves in position to score. But the Pioneer defense, again, stood up tall. Here we go, folks. Fourth down play. 4A. He's going to roll out. He's going to look. He's going to throw deep.
Oh, he's got a guy.
He's got a man, but it's incomplete.
He
lost it. And the Pioneer defense is held again.
Oh, he had him, but he just did not see it.
The receiver turned around. He lost it, and it dropped. And Pierce has held on downs. Keep in mind, Pierce still leading this football game 9-0. That is twice now that the Pioneers had held Albany inside the 15-yard line and forced them to turn it over on downs as that pass to the back corner of the end zone kind of got lost in the lights by the Albany receiver. It certainly looked like he turned around the wrong way or had trouble picking up that high-arcing pass from Taylor Foray as it dropped to his right. And the Pioneers would take over on downs, and the Pioneers then with time becoming very much a factor and a very solid running game, well, you knew Albany was going to be going after the football, trying to force a turnover, and that's exactly what they did.
Undefeated Piers once beaten Albany in a great ball game. 4:47, 6 on the clock to play. Hand off Casper. Johnny, not much.
Nothing.
And the ball came out.
Look at this.
And Albany has it, and they're going to say that was a live football, and that is exactly what Albany needed. Holy cow.
Wow.
Albany gets an absolutely huge turnover. The ball came out of the arms of Casper, and Albany's got it at the 24.
So Albany still very much in this football game with about 6 minutes left to play in the fourth quarter with Piers leading 9-0 as the Huskies again would get themselves into the red zone. Third time in the half that Albany had a chance to score deep in Piers territory, and I really thought that this was going to be the time that Albany did cross the goal line legitimately, as they had had two prior touchdowns taken off with penalties. This time, though, it looked like a done deal until number 20 showed up.
4A, bootleg, looking to throw, looking, he's got a man wide open, and it's intercepted! Intercepted! Oh, what a play!
Patience.
The Pioneers pick him off! The Pioneers have turned it over. That's Colton Eichens. Colton Eichens baited 4A into throwing that football. It looked like the receiver was all alone, and Eichens baited 4A. He was waiting in the weeds.
It's like last week, though. He comes up big in the fourth quarter with a big defensive play. Last week it was a safety, now it's the interception.
With 3:01, Colton Eichens, the biggest play of his career.
So the Pioneers again, now that's the third time they had denied Albany inside the 15-yard line. This time their third turnover, the Colton Eichens interception. Albany would get the ball back one final time. They were losing time rapidly. They were starting to spend their timeouts. And the Pioneers defense was asked to come up with one more play.
And it's fourth and goal from the 5, and the clock is running with 32 seconds left. 28 seconds, last chance for Albany. Fourth down.
They're going to throw it up here. Beer
throwing the ball. It is knocked away.
That's
and
it.
The Pioneers are going to win this football game. Johnny Casper swats it away in the back of the end zone.
And with that, a kneel down ended it. And the Pioneers had shut out Albany by a 9-0 score and earned a trip to the Class 3A semifinals against Tri-City United. What a ball game that was. So the Pioneers move on. Albany finished their season 9-2. Piers improves to 11-0 with that victory. Now as we take a look at what is coming up here with the game Friday night at Park Center High School, I had a chance to visit with members of the Pioneer coaching staff, the two coordinators, Dan Sayre on defense, Dave Rushlow on offense, and of course the head coach, Leo Polkamp. Let's first of all visit with the architect of the shutout, the defensive coordinator, Dan Sayre joins me. I'm being joined by defensive coordinator Dan Sayre here. And Coach Sayre, first of all, Pioneers headed to the semifinals of the Class 3A state tournament. And that makes back-to-back semifinal trips for this team. And what an effort for the defensive squad, not only to beat Albany, but to shut out a very, very talented Albany Husky offense last weekend at St. Cloud State. You got to be very proud of the effort that those 11 guys on the field put forth.
Yeah, you know, Rick, we every week we go in, it's our motto, if they don't score, we can't lose. And I know sometimes that people might think we're exaggerating, but we always say you got to have the motto on defense. You know, it's, we try to be perfect. You know, a lot of times we're far from it, but we kind of have the bend but don't break mentality. I know we gave up a few yards against Elman. They had 290 some yards, but we got to keep them out of the end zone. That's our number one job. And we had put in a game plan together. Obviously, we had 5 days to prepare, and we threw a ton of things at the kids, almost to the point where I was nervous. It was too much. But I talked to the kids and said, "Can you guys handle?" And they said, "Yes, we want more. We want more." And it's hard to explain what we did, but we adjusted to almost every set they came out in, and I was just unbelievably pleased with the way the kids performed. You can put the best game plan in the world together, but the kids still got to execute it, and they executed it more, and the most important thing is they played their tails off.
Talk about the mental makeup. You know, when Pierce is going through, you know, the middle of the season, and, you know, they scored, you know, 70 against Howard Lake, and they're running time in the, almost every fourth quarter. But now at this point of the year, the guys are almost they're just soaking it up, and they want to be coached, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And you know, this group of kids, and I have been fortunate enough to coach a lot of these kids. You know, 3 to 4 years in football. You know, for some of them, 3 to 4 years in baseball. You know, as talented as they are, as good of kids as they are, their willingness to get better and their attention to detail. I know, even talking to Mark Jensen about the other day, he's got a bunch of kids in wrestling. That's to me what separates them. They are so witty. They're so knowledgeable of the game. If you put something in, they not only know why you did that for them, but they also know, you know, what's the purpose behind everything. And if you can get kids to that point, holy cow, can they play at a whole different level? And I just think it puts you a step ahead of everybody else. We want our kids playing fast, especially on defense. And the less thinking we got to do, the better off you are. But if you can break things down and know what other people do, it puts you at a different level. And a lot of these kids are there, and that's why they've been so successful, not just in football, but also the other sports.
What was the number one thing that you wanted to take away against Albany?
You know, when we in the Albany game, our goal was to take away their running game. It's this number 33, this, you know, severe kid, and their running back 40 are two very, very good running backs, and we need to take those guys away. Albany is a run first. They're a run-first team, and not that we didn't think they could throw the ball, but we wanted to take away their running game. Fourier got to the corner against a bunch of teams, and this Beard kid is a very tough runner, and our kids did that. We went in taking their bread-and-butter plays away, or trying to, and I think we executed pretty well.
Late in that ball game, you were holding on to that 9-0 lead. Albany driving deep, as they seemed to be the entire second half, deep in Pierce territory. Foray breaks a Teddy Daler tackle, a couple of other potential sacks, got a pass off, made a big completion there. So you know that even though he was dinged up and hurting, and from what I hear now, a broken bone or two in that foot that he played through. But he threw a pass out there that I don't know if you saw the same thing I did, that he had a running back all alone out there, and all of a sudden here comes that white missile, and Colton Eichen streaking out of nowhere.
Yeah, you know, we had actually right before that play, you know, it was third and long or fourth and long, we changed our coverages up, and it wasn't, I'm not going to tell you that we knew that play was coming, but we had changed our coverages up just because we wanted one more guy in the secondary, and Colton had actually switched with Nick Harold right before that, and, you know, Colton said after the game, I had a feeling they were running something to the sidelines, and, you know, it's whether he baited him or not, I'm not sure, but I will tell you this, that Colton prepares himself, and I'm very confident that he knew something was up there, because when that ball was thrown, I looked, and I know from you watch it on film or from your guys' point of view, it probably looked like the guy was wide open, but as soon as it was thrown, I'm like, yep, Colton's going to get this one. And I thought he was going to knock it down, but he shot out of the cannon and made a tremendous interception, and probably the biggest play in his football career up to this point.
How much pressure was put on the defense being backed up in the red zone 4 times in the second half inside the 20? I mean, that's to not only hold them out once, but all 4 times.
Yeah, that is a lot of pressure. But, you know, it's Preston Rush Lowe's field goal right before that was huge. I mean, right before halftime. I know people don't understand that, but when you can get up a 2-score lead, that really, really made a difference in the ballgame. You know, if that game is 6-0, it's a whole different story when they're driving, because they come on and drive and they score. Well, they sure tie or potentially connect their point to maybe take the lead on this. But you know, when you have a two-score lead, you can do a little bit of things defensively, just for the fact of you can be a little more aggressive, because if you do make a mistake, they're not worried about them taking the lead on you. But it was pressure, no doubt about it. And I know at halftime, they made a 9-minute drive. Coach Polkamp looked at me when we called a timeout. He said, if we can get a stop here, this is a huge change in momentum, because they had taken so much time off the clock and didn't come away with anything. That was probably the biggest drive of the season for us as far as getting a stop defensively.
You look at the individual pieces on your defensive unit, and you've got Brett Kapsner at the middle linebacker, leads everybody in tackles. He's had some big interceptions, a big fumble recovery against Annandale, and a pick. Michael Meyer led the team in picks with 7, although he hasn't had one in a while. Maybe that'll change on Friday night. And Colton had the big one. I mean, you've got other guys back there in the secondary, and then you got Teddy Daylor up front leading everybody in sacks. You've got the inside push of Logan Stengel, a David Skiba, Jackson Michaels, Matt Kummet on the end. I mean, really, it's the sum of the pieces make up why it's such a great defense. Not any, you know, although there's a lot of great individual players, yep, when you mesh them all together, it is really something to see.
Yeah, no doubt about that. You know, and Rick, we tell the kids, I mean, obviously some kids are better at certain things, at covering or tackling, but we tell them we do not want any defense or any weaknesses on defense. When, you know, when I break down film on somebody, I look at what are their strengths, what are their weaknesses. I told the kids when we watch, when somebody watches film on us, I don't want them thinking, okay, we can run to this side or we can pick on this kid. And, you know, the old saying, you're only as good as your weakest link. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, especially once you get to this point of the year. They're going to pick on certain people if there's a weakness there. And I am so confident in every single kid that steps in the field, whether they're starting for us or whether we bring in the likes of, you know, Ike or Derek Hall or
Dorn,
Logan Leese, any of those kids, you know. But the bottom line is those kids are able to adjust a lot of things. And, you know, our secondary does a ton of different coverages that, and maybe it's more so than in a lot of schools at our level, but those kids want to do it. They have fun doing it. They're comfortable doing it. And quite honestly, a lot of times I give those kids to tell you guys, make your call. Here's what you see. You make your adjustments, and not too often do you have confidence at the high school level and kids in order to do that.
And I think that speaks a lot to the experience you had coming back from last year's semifinal team, able to trust those guys in those big spots. Okay, let's talk about your semifinal opponent, Tri-City United. What's the first thing that jumps out to you about them?
You know, they got some big boys. They really, really got some big guys up front on the line. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, these two guys play guard for them. They do some pulling and some trapping. You know, the big line, they're a quick running back, this Chimel kid, or however you pronounce his last name, number 28. He's returning 1,000-yard rusher. Their quarterback, very good athlete, left-handed. And then you throw in, you know, two wide receivers, number 30 and number 6. Number 6, probably 6'4", 6'5". They got some weapons in offense, no doubt about that. And you know, you watch film, the films we got, they were down 2 games in a row by 2 scores. And credit to those guys, they got a lot of seniors. They battled back, and once they took the lead, they kind of they didn't give it up. They kept on the other team's throat and really went after them. And we've noticed they adjust throughout the game. Early on in the games, you know, Bell Plain had stopped them, but after that, boy, they really followed through offensively and got things rolling.
Now, their quarterback is a left-hander, and when he does throw, it's usually kind of a rolling, you know, he's looking for that big 6'4 flanker a lot of the time. Is that something where you scheme? I know when we faced Annandale, you noticed their quarterback likes to roll right. You shifted Teddy Daylor and his long arms over to that side of the field. You know, Teddy is the guy that can get into a passing lane on that edge.
Yeah, no, we definitely change up the things defensively, and we're going to put certain people in certain matchups that we like. I play quarterback. I'm right-handed. If I had a chance to roll to my right, I did it, just as more natural. He does like rolling to his left, and a lot of times we'll have a lead running back out there kind of trying to set the edge for him. So we are going to put, you know, Teddy on that side quite a bit, just to hopefully cause some trouble for him, whether to get, you know, a tip pass or, you know, at least get in the passing lanes. And then we get to certain downs, we might even crank up a little pressure, because we've had pretty good success with that all year.
Yeah, I mean, different types of blitzes, whether it's Colton coming off an edge up the middle, from blind side from Lane Gertz or a Noah Bowser. I mean, you guys are getting in on quarterbacks. It's not just those front. When you can bring pressure from different spots on the field and really keep the offense guessing about where you're coming from.
Yeah, the biggest thing we like about the four linebacker, whether we're in a 3-4 defense or 4-4, is we can kind of bring people from all different angles, and the guys that we have going really understand why they're going. We don't, I feel like some teams blitz just for the sake of blitzing. These guys blitz with a purpose. They get a guy in this gap or they go in the right gap, and you have to be able to do that, because the old saying, live with the blitz and die with the blitz. You can catch some, you can cause some big time turnovers on it, but if you don't execute it right, you're one guy shorter in the defensive backfield, which can lead to some big gains for the offense.
Well, Coach, good luck to the defense Friday night at Park Center High against Tri-City United. Like I said, they got some big linemen up front that doesn't take a lot of holes for those two running backs that really are hard runners, slippery runners, not really big kids back there. But yep. They're there. They're in the semifinals, too, for a reason. They're a very good football team.
No, absolutely. Everybody asks all week, what do you know about them? And so, until we get film, we don't know nothing on them. But I do know this. When you're playing in the Final Four of the state tournament, you're for real. And it's kind of fun playing different schools. We like doing that. It's just, not that I don't like playing the schools around here, but it's fun playing somebody new. And our kids are excited. I know I just talked to two of the seniors this morning, and try to get the kids to, really just enjoy the moment that they're in and take advantage of it, because I told Teddy Daler this morning, when you were playing fourth grade football on Wednesday nights here, I bet if you just said your senior year you're going to be playing for a chance to play in the Prep Bowl, you just said, let's start them right now, we'll lace them up. So we're excited. We got some guys slowly getting back healthier, and it's going to be one heck of an atmosphere tomorrow night.
Coach Sayre, thanks. Good luck. All right, that's defensive coordinator Dan Sayre. Dan talked about the size that Tri-City United will bring up front to the Pioneer defense, and they are a ground-oriented attack. They can throw the ball, but they'd prefer to run. And when you hear some of these sizes of some of these kids, now from tackle to tackle for the Titans, they are averaging out at 251.4 pounds. That's from one tackle to the other, 251.4. You look at the Pioneer line and people say it's big. Pierce's average weight from tackle to tackle is 239. So TCU is about 12 pounds on average heavier from tackle to tackle. And up front, as you look at it, it is Jake Nading. He's a tackle at 6'2", 215. The other tackle is Jordan Bartholomew, 6'2", 212. So there's two tackles, go 215 and 212. Where their real size is at their guard spots. Unlike the Pioneers' big linemen are their two tackles, Jackson Michaels and David Skiba. It's the guard spots for Tri-City United. You've got Alex Burns at one guard, 6'3", 307. And then at the other guard is John Reek, 6'3", 329. So those two big guys at the guard spots really open up some holes for those two running backs. They will run primarily out of an I formation tomorrow night. Their center is Max Kalina. He is a 5'10", 194-pounder. So their size is primarily at the guard spots, two 300-plus pounders at the two guards. And by the way, all seniors on offense for this Titans team. 11 starters are all seniors, and on defense, 9 of the 11 are seniors. The two juniors are the pair of middle linebackers for the Titans. Before we get into their defense, let's finish up talking about the Tri-City United offense. Their quarterback is a left-hander, Trevor Schmizik, 5'11", 185. Now, Schmizik keeps a lot of plays alive with his legs. He never gives up on a play, and he's the type of kid that really, when you think you've got him, that's when he's sometimes most dangerous. Schmizik's numbers for the year, they don't throw a lot,
He was 49 of 95 for 832 yards. He threw 10 touchdown passes. He's been intercepted six times. So Schmizek, just over 800 yards passing on the season. His top receivers, you've got Jackson Fedema. He is a 5'10", 146-pound, smallish receiver. He'll line up in the slot a lot. He led the team in receiving with 33 catches for 542 yards, 7 touchdowns. Their big guy is their 6'4" flanker. His name is Carter Rinda. He'll wear number 6 tomorrow night. Fedema wears number 30. But Rinda will line up as a flanker. Not overly fast, but he's their starting center in basketball. He can get up and go and get the ball a lot. He's 6'4", 198, so he's a very big receiver that'll be out there for the Pioneer D-backs to contend with, as Rinda caught 22 balls, 409 yards, and 4 touchdowns this year. But really, the guy that makes it go for them is on the ground. It's their senior running back, Aaron Schimmel. Schimmel is a 2-time 1,000-yard rusher now. As a junior, he went over 1,000, and this year, Schimmel will come into this game with 1,220 yards on the ground and 13 touchdowns. Schimmel listed at 5'7", 166, and he gets the ball a lot. He's carried the ball 200 times this year. And just to give you an idea, how does that compare to the Pioneers, the top ball carrier for Pierce, Lane Gertz, carried the ball 122 times. So almost 80 more carries for Schimmel out of the backfield. Their fullback is Sam Ehlers. 70 rushes, 308 yards. He's banged it across the goal line a couple of times. They are a good quarterback sneaking team, too. They will run the sneak very effectively, and I mentioned their size at the guards. I mean, they just kind of, if they get any push at all, pretty good short yardage situations in their favor with their quarterback sneaks. They've done it very effectively in short yardage. So those are your offensive leaders, so to speak, for the Tri-City United Titans out of Section 1-3A. And again, that is the same section that produced Rochester Lourdes last year. So for the second year in a row, Piers will have a Section 1 opponent in the semifinals. Now, before we get into the defense, let's talk about the guy that will draw up the X's and O's to get the Pioneer offense rolling. That is the offensive coordinator for the Pioneers, Dave Rushlow. Well, I'm not sure what happened to my Dave Rushlow interview there. I don't hear it going right now. Try and restart it here. Nope, it's not going. So we'll wait on the Dave Rushlow interview for now. But we will try and get that, too, as soon as it queues up, I believe. As you look at Tri-City United, Piers, a lot of wrestlers on their team.
They have to be updated.
There's Dave. Here we go. Here's Dave Rushlow.
We win that type of thing. So we had a...
Well, apparently that's not working either. So, the Pioneers with plenty of wrestlers on their team. There were 3 Tri-City wrestlers on this football team that made it to the state tournament last year, and they are in their starting lineup. And I just talked a little bit ago that 2 of them were their junior linebackers. They are state tournament wrestlers as well. You've got Jordan Simonette. He's a starting linebacker listed at 5'11", 216. He's a junior. He qualified last year. They're a double-A wrestling school. He qualified at 195 last year. And then the other junior inside linebacker is Mason Rutt. Rutt, 6'1", 180, and he finished on the podium last year. He finished sixth as a sophomore at 170 pounds in class AA. And their top wrestler was their heavyweight, Alex Burns. Burns is going to have to cut a little bit. Right now he's listed at 307 in the football program, but he wrestled his way to a third-place finish against the AA heavyweights last year. So a third-place finish for Alex Burns last year in wrestling. The Tri-City United team, in its fourth year in existence, making their first appearance, they were 7-3 a year ago. They ended up losing to Plainview Elgin Millville 28-26.
During the week leading up to practice, leading up to the Albany game, you know, he got some reps, but it's just so hard to simulate actual game conditions for an inexperienced player like that, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, and you try to get him, you know, ready and tell him, you know, that just a football game, and so, you know, don't make it bigger than what it is, and. You know, for Preston, you know, to have his first varsity start in the state tournament, that's, you know, again, that's pretty tough to overcome. And he was nervous, just like any one of us would have been, you know, and just to overcome that, you know, I thought he settled down after the first few series. You know, we kind of went to Wildcat a little bit just to let him, you know, get caught up with the game. And then he came back in the second half. I thought he did a good job as far as just running the offense. You know, in the second half, we didn't really go to the pass, and we were trying to run out the clock because Albany was helping us with that as well as they were running out the clock. So, again, you know, good job for Preston, a great experience for him. And you know, again, all week long in practice, he does a great job. He just has to take that to the field now. And I think this week, he'll be a lot better this week than he was last week.
I think I can't be absolutely certain, but I would guess that Preston's in the record books as a quarterback that has won a state tournament game and taken his team into the semifinals with negative career passing yardage.
You know what? That might be the first anywhere, yeah. I think he's 1 for 5 with -4, right?
That's right. -4 yards passing. That's gotta give an opposing defensive coordinator nightmares looking at that number. How are we going to possibly shut this kid down?
Yeah. So
talk about,
you know, he'll come around and be all right.
Absolutely. I thought he was very poised and composed. You know,
it
all starts with the exchange, you know, from Teddy Daler to him. And in a pressure situation, I didn't see one bobbled snap there.
Nope. Like I said, I think he kind of got caught up in the moment at first, and then we just talked to him and had him settle him down, and then he came back and did a nice job. So.
Now, against Annandale, Noah Bozer came in the Wildcat when Arendt went down late in the ball game, and we saw Noah in the second half a lot in the Wildcat. Why, you know, what tabs Noah Bozer as that player to be in the Wildcat? Why not a Lane Gertz? Why not a Johnny, you know?
Right, and again, you know, Noah's a pretty smart kid, and just the handling the ball. I guess one thing is if we do throw it, he's probably the best thrower out of the backfield. So that was one of the decisions as well. We had some other kids, you know, we tried some other ones in there, a Nick Harold or, you know, a Lane or so. But, you know, Noah's the best probably. And we run a little wide a lot of that, run some fades if we have to. And, again, just gives, you know, I think going to that too, it's kind of nice to give us an extra blocker. So it kind of gives teams some fit sometimes when we do that.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to respect the run there. And with those guys up front, what a job they have done. It's really been kind of a dream offensive line for you as the offensive coordinator, hasn't it been? From Colton Eichens, Jackson Michaels, Brett Kaffner, Teddy Daler, Logan Stangle, David Skiba, to Matt Cummett, up and down that line. I mean, that is a wall.
Yeah, they're solid. I mean, and what's fun about it is they're very smart, too. They're football smart. They know their assignments. We can throw some things at them. And again, they just do a tremendous job of coming off the ball and just sealing things. And that's why we're able to run the ball the way we are.
In the backfield now, Lane Gertz has had an outstanding year. He runs with violence, really, doesn't he? He is really a good downfield runner. He gets ahead of steam, and he is bowling people over.
you know, Armada run the ball downhill like everybody says, and that's so true. When you're running the bone, you got to run that thing downhill, and Wayne does a great job of that. I mean, he really hits the hole hard, and just actually, I tend to say, you know, it's okay to cut around the guy once in a while. You don't have to run him over every time, you know. So, he's just been running the ball great, you know, as has Johnny Casper and Noah as well out of the bone. You know, we get Derek Hall in there a little bit. Nick Carroll has ran a little bit. Again, all those guys do a great job. I think, you know, we don't have a guy over 1,000 yards, and one of the big reasons is our defense has been giving us such short fields. But, again, spreading the ball around, you know, we have a lot of short fields. And, you know, I'd like to see how many points compared to other years that, you know, I guess I haven't even looked at that yet. But, you know, we're putting up the points just because we're getting the short field. So, but these kids are really been playing hard, and that's the key, is to get all 11 guys on both sides of the ball playing hard and good things happen.
I you know, you take a look at a kid like Derek Hall in the backfield for, and I liken him to like a Kansas City Royal bullpen. You know, you've got your starting pitching of, you know, Gertz and Johnny Casper and Noah Bolzer, but when you can bring in a kid like Derek Hall, you know, kind of almost as a reliever, what a weapon that is.
Right, and you can almost liken it to Dyson coming in to pinch run almost with the speed, you know. It's kind of nice to give him that little boost there. You know, Hall's a very fast runner and a little scat back, and it's just a nice change of pace as well as give the other guys a little breather once in a while.
Johnny Casper, you know, he has been battling that lingering ankle, and on turf, you know, he's hasn't had that explosive game that we all know he's capable of. And, you know, maybe as each day goes by, that ankle gets a little bit healthier, and he's able to really do what we know Johnny's capable of doing.
Right. I mean, we've seen it last year a little bit with Johnny, and he just has not come around with that ankle. We kind of seen it the first quarter against Annandale, like, whoa, you know, there's our Johnny. And then he kind of tweaked it again, so he's back to, you know, probably 65-70%, but like I told Johnny, I said, your 65-70% is a lot better than any other, you know, a lot of other running backs in the whole state. So keep it rolling here. But if we can, he can, you know, it looked like in practice this week it's getting a little better. So, you know, if it keeps getting better and look out in the game, I think Johnny could be that one, you know, the old game breaker that we need.
An amazing thing to me that really stood out in that Albany game is that when without a real threat of a passing game, you know, teams, you always want to say, make the other team one-dimensional, and it gives you a chance to win. But you were basically one-dimensional and still won that football game.
Right. You know, that's credit to our kids in the line, you know, playing. I think, you know, Albany packed it in and knew that, you know, we weren't going to pass in the second half just because that's kind of our style. You know, their opponent at that time was the clock, and to run it out. And, you know, still pick up a few first downs, I guess. For our defense's credit, I would like to pick up a few more to let them rest a little more. But, again, you know, kids come off the ball. They did a great job. You know, and then it's always good when you can hand it over to your defense and feel comfortable that they're going to just stop them.
What have you seen about Tri-City United's defense? Would you compare them to maybe that we've seen? Or are they a totally different look? Or, you know, what have you seen about the Titans?
Yeah, you know, I think overall Albany, probably a total defense, Albany is probably a little tougher. But these guys got some real big kids up front. You know, they have about four or five David Skibas, that size. They got a middle linebacker that's just a really good middle linebacker that we're going to have to get a body on. So with that, you know, if you look, they're a lot like probably about Annandale. You know, they're kind of their D-backs and so forth. But they are bigger up front than Annandale, are more of an Albany type up front. So, again, I think, you know, watching film and everything, we found some weaknesses, and hopefully we can take advantage of them and see what happens.
Yeah, do you expand the playbook at this point of the year? Do you refine the playbook, or is it a game by game situation at this point with only a max of two games left on the season?
Right, we definitely expanded this time, but with Preston coming in, we kind of had to shrink her down a little bit just because of him not being in there, and just don't want to overwhelm him, you know. But if Aaron is able to go again, you know, we definitely expand it. I think I said last week online that, you know, we had some plays that we were working on just for these situations, and hopefully that we can pull some of them off and see what happens.
Maybe the most underrated portion of the Pioneer offense is the receiving core. I think it's the deepest and best receiving core I've ever seen the Pioneers be able to put on the field. And, you know, without, you know,
a real emphasis on the passing game with the outstanding line play and running game. Those guys certainly are a threat. If nothing more than you have to respect the pass with guys like Michael Meyer and Colton and Matt Kummet and Nick Harold and those type of receivers out there.
Right. I think, you know, that's kind of our sleeper, that if teams really do stuff us, that with Aaron back there, we can go to the pass, and if we have to be one-dimensional in the pass, we could be. Again, just because Aaron reads defense so well, and Michael, is just great route runner, runs a great athlete that can go up and get the ball. And you got Nick Harrell, who's a little scat back, scat type, Wes Welker type receiver, that slot receiver. And then, Colton, actually, out of his tight end position, is a very good receiver. So if we had to go to the pass, I actually feel more so than any other year that we could do that.
Well, this is always a very fun time of year, and boy, how lucky are we to be able to be a part of this, going to semifinal games now back-to-back years, and I think this is, our sixth semifinal, and we've made one prior championship appearance, and we did all right that year. Let's try to get back to that championship game there, Coach.
Actually, it'd be really, really fun to get back there and see what happens again. So we got our work cut out, and hopefully the boys can do it and play hard, and then we'll see what happens.
Coach Rushlow, good luck Friday night against Tri-City United, and let's put one more weekend of work together here and get down to TCF Bank.
Exactly. All right, thanks, Rick.
All right, Dave Rushlow, he's the offense coordinator and the activities director. All right, that was Dave Rushlow. We talked about the previous semifinal trips for the Pioneers. Last year, of course, we all remember the overtime 25-24 loss to Rochester Lourdes in the 3A semis. The previous four semifinal trips were all in Class AA. In 2007 at the Metrodome, Piers loses a 29-22 overtime game to the Laverne Cardinals. So our last two semifinal games have been lost in overtime. Let's buck that trend. In 2005, Pioneers lost to Eden Valley Watkins 26-7 in the AA semifinals at the Metrodome. Of course, in 2004, Pioneers won the Prep Bowl in 04. And on their way to that championship win over Eden Valley Watkins, they beat Waterville Elysian Morristown 20-6 in the Metrodome in the semifinals that year. And in 2003, Pioneers made their first semifinal trip, and that was in the Metrodome again, facing the Breck Mustangs. And Breck took it to us pretty good, 47-13. So Piers is 1-4 all-time in state semifinal games. And again, last two have been decided in overtime and not in our favor. So we're going to try and change that tomorrow night. Comparing these two teams offensively, points per game, Tri-City United scores about 33 a game. They give up 10 a game. Piers, a little bit higher scoring. They average 39.7, about a touchdown more per game than the Titans, and they also give up about a field goal less. Where TCU allows 10 points a game, Piers allows 7.7 points per game. Offensively, both teams feature the run. We talked about Aaron Schimmel, his 1,200-plus yards rushing. As a team, they run for about 240.5 yards per game they average through their 11. For the Pioneers, they're putting up, through their 11 games, 351 yards per game on the ground. So Pioneers, it looks like, might have a decided advantage rushing-wise. For the Titans' defense, they're they've given up 2,180 yards in total yardage so far. So just over about 200 a game for the defense of TCU. And again, they're big up front with some pretty athletic linebackers in the middle, a pair of underclassmen. The only two juniors that start for TCU are their middle linebackers, Jordan Simonette and Mason Rutt. Rutt number 25. Simonette will wear number 10 tomorrow night. By the way, Piers will be wearing their home blacks
as TCU will be the visitor. Pierce is designated as the home team tomorrow night. Speaking of colors, it's a red out tomorrow. Bring your red, wear as much red as you can for that ball game tomorrow to support the Pioneers down in Park Center. A red out is what is being called for tomorrow night. So now let's visit with the general. Leo Polkamp, head coach of the Pioneers. He has gone with this team now in his 30th season, bringing this team to their sixth semifinal. And he's ready for more here. Two more games to go, hopefully, for this Pioneer team. I visited with Coach Polkamp as well today. Okay. Joining me now is the head coach of the Pierce Pioneers, Coach Leo Polkamp. And Coach, here it is. It's state semifinal team time in Class 3A. Pioneers coming off just one of the big wins in program history, and you've had a lot of them, but I think a shutout of Albany in the state tournament has to rank right up there.
Oh, it certainly does, Rick. You know, I have so much respect for the Albany football program, even when Jim Mader had it, and even before that. They've been to the state tournament 20 times. Mike Kleinschmidt has kept it going year in and year out. You look at Albany, and they got such a great tradition. And we knew that they were going to give us a good test. And like I said, we were very fortunate to win that ball game. We're very proud of our accomplishment. But all it really was one big step to the next game, which is against in the semifinals against TCU.
Are you at, you know, we've been around this game a long time. You longer than me, but I think I've been around this thing a long time too. The fact that Pierce is where they're at in the class they're at in such a short period of time. This is only the school's third year in Class 3A.
Well, you know, we were always a challenge in 2A. We won the state championship in 2A, and we've been very, very competitive in 2A. And I have said that if we go up to 3A, we will be competitive. And the fact that we're being at a state tournament level in 3A is really an accomplishment to the kids. I give a lot of credit to my assistant coaches that we continued our winning ways at a you know, we're a small school in Class 3A, that we continue to win and play at a high level is a credit to a lot of, and the kids too. We are blessed with some good athletes and who really dedicated themselves to Pierce football.
Semifinal game against Tri-City United. How much experience, not only as coaches but as players, can you draw from last year's experience against Rochester Lord in a semifinal game?
Well, I think the key is our kids will prepare. They will prepare for their next game, which is their biggest game. You know, they're not going to sit back and say, we beat Albany, now we're just going to show up and we'll win. They certainly are not like that. They will respect their next opponent, TCU. They will prepare. We already have prepared this week. We got their attention that this team can beat you if you don't play up to your ability. And I think having 15 seniors who have played in the state tournament last year, some of them even played as sophomores. These seniors are really leading the group, very focused group. And I think if your seniors are like that, the rest of the team will jump on board.
To me, one of the most under-talked about things about the win over Albany with Aaron Weber being sidelined with the ankle is basically how one-dimensional the Pioneers became, and you still won that football game.
Yes, we were in the second half, especially. You know, we started with the sophomore quarterback, Preston Rushlow, and he did a nice job, but we were asking a little bit more. We needed to complete some passes, and he was made a little bit nervous. We did go to the Wildcat with Noel Bozer, and we were able to move the ball somewhat. The second half, we went back to Preston, and of course, we had a two-score lead at this point. It's 9-0. We felt that if we can come out and establish the run, which we really didn't do that well in the second half. And of course, Albany, I think, you know, there's 24 seniors on their team. They played very, very hard. They were playing very stout defense. We didn't really want to go to our throwing game at that point when you have a lead. And it just became one heck of a football game.
The field goal right before half by Preston Rushlow changed everything, didn't it?
Oh, that was huge, Rick. You know, we were up by 6. We missed the extra point, and we come down, and then all of a sudden we make this field goal. All of a sudden it's 2 scores. We know that our defense was playing well. Little did I know we would shut them out. but just playing defense that much in the second half was probably asking a lot of these kids. You don't really want to spend that much time on defense, as you know, Rick, that to win a ball game, you need that championship defense, which puts you back on offense. We struggled in the second half with our offense.
Well, you know, you're facing a top-notch defense, too. I mean, you were still able to move the ball, pick up some big first downs when you needed them. I mean, Lane Gertz was running like a guy possessed out there for you, just running over Albany defenders.
Yeah, I thought he really played well, ran hard. You know, Johnny is still a little bit, he's not 100%, but he'll give you everything he has, you know. And then I thought Noah Bozer played very well in the Wildcat, and he had some key runs, plus at the fullback position. He does a lot of good for us. So we had kids step up in this game for us, like I said, over a very quality opponent. And we hung on, and we got a victory. And like I said, now we need to get our offense going, and hopefully we will if we can get Aaron Weber back.
A lot of high school football teams have been done and packed away the pads for over a month in years past. We've talked about it before, the value of these extra practices, not so much for the juniors and seniors, but for those freshmen, sophomores to be exposed to this level of preparation and what it takes.
I know it helps them to get better. The thing I always wonder is, you know, they're 15, 16-year-old kids. We started our camp back in July already, and then, of course, we had a week off, and now we've been going for 3.5 months. And I hope that they're hanging in there, realizing how important they are and realizing how much better they're going to get for the future.
Tri-City United, an impressive 10-1 record coming in. Their only loss is to Marshall, who made a state tournament appearance. And, you know, you have to respect any team that has made it this far. You can't take anything lightly knowing that you are this close to the goal now.
Absolutely. And I think I said, if you don't respect your opponent, you're going to be turning in your gear. And our kids have focused on TCU. They're not looking past. They know that it's the next big step. They want to get to the title game. It has to go through TCU, a neutral field, of course. And they see they have some good size up front. They've, on both sides of the line, they're probably even bigger than us, and we're not really small. It's going to be a battle in the trenches, and Piers has been strong all year as far as on the line of scrimmage and for the most part controlling it. But we're going to have to really step it up in this game. If there's another notch, I hope there is. These kids play well. They got a chance to win.
What about playing an unfamiliar opponent in a team like Tri-City United that you've never faced, they've never faced us? You know, is there an advantage one way or the other? I know that the Pioneers like seeing teams that have never faced us.
We do, because I think the teams know our tendencies. They know what we're about. Dave Rushlow, our offensive coordinator, does a tremendous job, and he always said, I'd rather play somebody different, somebody new. One thing about TCU is they have a very veteran squad. A lot of those seniors played as juniors, and I think their record was like 7-3. Now they're seniors, they're 10-1. They're bringing just a ton of experience back, just like we are. And when you have that leadership and that experience, there's the big chance for a super game come Friday night, and they want it just as bad as our kids do.
When you were across the way on Husky Field the other last weekend against the Albany Huskies, did you look up and just see that sea of red up in the stands and realize the huge turnout? And hopefully that'll take place again. A lot of people will head down to the cities to watch the Pioneers in the semis.
Well, it's great. You know, I think right before halftime when they were cheering, we went into the, we go right in the underground below where the stands are, and we had the kids are just screaming, and the kids or the fans were screaming and cheering, so they just almost give you goosebumps. Piers has been very, very good this year, maybe even more so. We've had nice weather, you know, and the fans come out and you turn around. I remember my parents' night, we were beating a team 70-20, and I looked up the stands and not hardly anybody had left. So they're very supportive. They've been proud of their accomplishments, and I'm sure we're going to have a good turnout down at Park Center where we play TCU, and hopefully they can cheer us on to a victory.
This is a different type of question here. How do you think Tri-City United is preparing for Piers? What do you think is going through their mindset?
You know, the first thing the coaches do, you try and look at weaknesses, try to exploit the defense. You know, one thing we've gotten better is the teams have tried and gotten wide on us lately. Albany did on their toss sweep. Annandale went for getting wide, and we've defended that much better in now the last three, four games. If you want to attack us up the middle, I think with the Teddy and David and Logan and Brett and Lane, we're pretty stout up front. They perhaps might take the air a little bit more. They got a strong arm quarterback and throw the ball a mile. They might just come out and figure out, well, I don't know if we're going to. But yet, Rick, they're going to try and establish what they do well, and that's their running game. So most teams like this, you look for weaknesses. They're probably not going to see a lot, just like we're not seeing a lot. But we're going to come out and do what we do best, and hopefully that's good enough.
Game day preparation, you're going to leave from Pierce, take the buses down to Park Center. Talk about, you know, what do you like to see out of your kids? Do you watch body language of kids? I know you've got something you call quiet time, and it's a quite regimented, actually, type of process you go through to get ready on game day, isn't it?
Yeah, it's something that you want to keep a routine. I've always said I want to arrive at the game site at 5 o'clock, which would be 2 hours before kickoff. I'll give the kids time to settle in. They listen to the music. Some are a little nervous. They'll walk and wander around. A lot of them want to go and play catch with a football. Some will just sit around and visit. But they do have a little bit of a regimen. You try to keep them in that routine. We will be leaving. It's a away game, so we'll bust down. We'll stop at a wayside rest, give them a sandwich and a Gatorade, use the bathrooms, and then from there we'll take our trip to the field. And then try and keep it the same. I did not like at Husky Field. We got down there in plenty of time, but the Huskies were playing, and the band wouldn't leave the field. The players wouldn't leave the field. Our kids wanted to go out and play catch, and we wanted to actually warm up our kickers and stuff like that, which we weren't able to do. So you always wonder about stuff like that, but they certainly figured it out, and they came out to play.
Now, as far as special teams, I know on film we saw this Camille or however, you know, they're big running back, big numbers wise. He's not physically a big kid for Tri-City United, but he did return a kickoff in their last ball game, a big four touchdown second quarter for him. So I mean, kick coverage has been so big. Lane had two touchbacks against Albany, really prevents any team from getting any big plays going when you're able to do that. But you know, this kid looks like he's a threat in the return game as well.
He's just a good football player. He's got quick feet, not a big in stature, but you know, we remember having a player by the name of Mike Stang who was very quick, kind of built like him, tough to bring down, can break, can make cuts on you. We've seen some pretty good backs. You know, we've seen Melrose had a good back, and you know that Albany had a good back that we have to tackle well. We really have to tackle him well. And our kickoff coverage, which has been good, has to continue to be good again, because every time he touches the ball, he's a threat to take it all the way to the end zone.
Well, Coach, this is going to be a lot of fun. I know the Pioneers 1-4 in semifinal games. We want to get to that TCF Bank Stadium for the first time ever and take a shot at another Prep Bowl title here.
That's the goal, Rick.
All right.
Kids have made up T-shirts, you know. Stampeding to the bank, and then I said, you know, it's a motivational thing that Dave does with them, and hopefully we can go down there and fill our dream of getting to the bank this year and see what happens.
Do you have any thoughts, or have you given any thought on the other half of the semifinal bracket, the Jackson County Central Dilworth-Glendon-Felton ball game?
Well, I heard that Jackson County has really put up big numbers. They're very explosive, averaging, you know, 45, 47 points a game. They say they're pretty physical. They will play in Dilworth, Glendon, Felton, whom we played last year up in Brainerd in the state quarterfinals. And they kind of reloaded. They basically lost a big senior class. They've reloaded. That game will be played Saturday at 1 o'clock in Maple Grove. And should we win, hopefully we win, Coach Rushlow and Coach Sayre and I would go down and scout Dilworth and JCC, who would be the winner, would be our opponent in the prep bowl. So but we got to take care of business Friday night first.
All right, Coach, good luck Friday night, and we'll see you down on the field.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, that's Leo Polkamp, head coach of the That is Leo Polkamp, coach of the Pioneers, as the Pioneers will leave early tomorrow afternoon and head to Park Center High School. And we hope lots of you head down there as well. If not, you'll be able to listen here on You Are There Sports. It's the live link is
FM Sports. That's S is in Sam, F is in Frank, M is in Mike Sports. All one word, sfmsports.net, and it'll be Channel 3, your listening link there for that. Okay, so now as we look at a couple of other notes here, we're going to finish off looking at the other games going on in the state tournament. One other note that we do have, we'll talk about enrollments here. This is Pierce's third year in AAA. They came into this eight-team state tournament, the smallest enrollment, 325 enrollment listed for Pierce. That makes them the smallest 3A school in the state tournament. The next smallest by two is Jackson County Central, listed at 327. So those two smallest enrollment schools are in the semis. As you look at Albany, they came in with 488. So about 160 more than Pierce enrollment-wise. And then this team that Pierce will face on Friday night, Tri-City United, which is Montgomery Lonsdale Center, they're not too far behind Albany. They're listed at 452 as an enrollment. So about 130 more than Pierce's enrollment. So that, we'll see how that plays out. But so far, the Pioneers, they've beaten Albany. And now they will go against Tri-City United. And that'll be tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. Now, we take a look at, I'm just looking at my notes here and making sure I have left nothing that I wanted to talk about. I think that pretty much sums it up as far as Tri-City United. They are 10-1. Their only loss was to Marshall. Marshall beat them 34-0 in week 7. They haven't scored a lot of points up until their last game. In their section playoffs, they only beat Cannon Falls 14-0 in the semis, and then they had to come back and beat Plainview Elgin Millville 13-12 to win the section championship. And they got behind to Belle Plaine in the quarters by 2 touchdowns right away, but then a huge second quarter by Aaron Schimmel. And again, Schimmel is their top running back, number 28. You'll see him tomorrow night. You'll see a lot of him. And according to the lineup I've received, he is not on their defensive top 11. So Schimmel is one of the guys that only goes one way in offense, but he goes a long way on offense. 1,200 yards, rushing 13 touchdowns. But Schimmel scored 4 touchdowns in the quarterfinals in the second quarter against Belle Plaine in that 41-24 win. One of those touchdowns was a 94-yard kickoff return for the Titans. So Schimmel will certainly be a marked man tomorrow night for Coach Sayers' defense. Now, for the rest of the state tournament, we will start in nine-man, and boy, what a field of nine-man teams that are still standing. 4 unbeatens in the final four. The semifinals are held at St. Cloud State University. One of them tomorrow night, the other one will be Saturday. The Friday night game is at 5 o'clock at St. Cloud State, and it's the Underwood Rockets at 12-0 against the Ely Timberwolves, also 12-0. Pair of unbeatens there. And the Saturday semifinal is also at 5 o'clock at St. Cloud State. Two-time defending champion Grand Meadow takes on Wobbin. The Bombers are 11-0. Grand Meadow comes in 12-0. 4 undefeated teams left in 9-man, and only one will still be standing. In Class A, the Final Four, these games are both on Saturday, one at St. Cloud State, one at Prior Lake High School. The St. Cloud State Saturday night game at 8 o'clock, a pair of 11-0 teams there. You've got the Polars of Minneapolis North High School. They are taking on the Bombers of Bram. Bram and Minneapolis North, 8 o'clock at St. Cloud State, Saturday night in Class A. The other semifinal at Prior Lake is a Saturday afternoon game at 3 p.m. That'll have 9-3 Goodhue. Now, they're unranked. They're kind of the upstart in Class A. They are taking on a 12-0 Minneota Vikings team. So 9-3 Goodhue, but a very strong traditional power football team, Goodhue, down in the southeastern corner. They're taking on another strong Minneota team at 12-0. Those are your Class A semifinals. In Class AA, again, boy, St. Cloud State's going to be busy tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at Husky Field. Pipestone is 12-0. Pipestone beat Howard Lake Waverly Winstead in the quarterfinals. Pipestone is 12-0, facing United North Central at 9-2. And that's quite a story for United North Central. They did not win a game. They were 0-9 last year, but here they are in the semifinals this year against 12-0 Pipestone. That's 8 o'clock tomorrow night at St. Cloud State. And then on Saturday at 1 o'clock, this has got a lot of buzz about it in AA circles. Undefeated 12-0 Caledonia, ranked number one. I don't need to tell you a whole lot about Caledonia. They are a traditional power in the state of Minnesota. They are looking for their seventh championship. They lost in the semis last year. Caledonia 12-0. Their opponent will be the Bulldogs of Otter Tail Central. They'll come in with a record of 11-0. So a pair of unbeatens at Moundsview High School Saturday afternoon at 1 o'clock in the other semifinal. I'm going to save the other AAA semi. We'll skip ahead to Class 4A. And the 4A games, one on Friday night, and that is number one ranked Becker 11-0 against number two ranked Stuartville. What a battle that'll be. That's going to be played Friday night at 7 at Chanhassen High School. Becker and Stuartville, both 11-0. And then in 4A on Saturday at 4 o'clock, this game will be played at Maple Grove High School. The Spartans of Ricori take on the Packers of South St. Paul. Ricori will enter 9-3 on the year. South St. Paul is 10-1. 4 o'clock Saturday at Maple Grove. In Class 5A, a Friday night game at Minnetonka High School will pit St. Thomas Academy at 10-1 against undefeated Moorhead. The Spuds are 11-0. The Cadets at 10-1. That's at 7 o'clock Friday night at Minnetonka. The other Class 5A semifinal, 10-1 St. Michael Albertville against 11-0 Mankato West. That's at Prior Lake High Saturday at 6 p.m. There was a game tonight that has just gone final in the big school, Class 6A. It was Osseo against Totino Grace. Osseo came in tonight 8-3, Totino Grace 9-2. Of course, they knocked off Eden Prairie, snapping the Eagles' 40-game win streak with their win in the quarterfinals. But their run is over. Osseo has just beaten Totino Grace tonight, 22-21. So Osseo, the Orioles, are the first team into the Prep Bowl. Congratulations to Osseo. 22-21 winners tonight over Totino Grace. Osseo will face the winner of tomorrow night's game between East Ridge out of Woodbury. They are 10-1. Their opponent will be Maple Grove. The Crimson are 9-2. And that game will be played at Eden Prairie tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And those are the tournament games outside of Class 3A, which leaves us with the 3A Final Four. Of course, we've talked ad nauseum about the Piers Tri-City United matchup tomorrow night. The other semifinal is Saturday afternoon at 1 o'clock, played at Maple Grove High School. And it'll be Jackson County Central, the Huskies, at 9-2. They And their opponent will be the Rebels of Dilworth Glendon Felton, ranked second. They are 10-1. Of course, Piers faced DGF last fall in the quarterfinals up in Brainerd. So DGF has advanced to the semis against the Huskies of Jackson County Central. And that, again, is at 1 o'clock at Maple Grove High Saturday afternoon. If the Pioneers win, you can guarantee a strong contingent of Pioneer coaches will be in that ballgame to do some scouting. The Prep Bowl schedule is split. It's a two-day Prep Bowl again this year at TCF Bank Stadium on the campus of the University of Minnesota. It's the last year that it's held at TCF Bank, as the Prep Bowl will move over to the new Diggs Viking Stadium next year. And we should get back to the normal schedule instead of the early start that we had this year. But we are within shouting distance of the finish line now for the high school football season. The nine-man Prep Bowl will be on a Friday the 13th at 10 a.m. Also that day, the AA Championship Prep Bowl game would be at 1 o'clock. And then at 4 o'clock, the 4A Championship, and they will finish it off with the big school, the 6A Championship. On Saturday, back at TCF Bank, the day will start at 10 a.m. with the Class A Prep Bowl. Then it will be the Class AAA Prep Bowl at 1 o'clock on Saturday the 14th. And the last game of the Prep Bowl will be the Class 5A Prep Bowl, and that would be Saturday at 4. So that is what's coming up. Let's hope that we're making plans for Saturday, 1 o'clock on the 14th at TCF Bank Stadium. Well, I know that this has gone on probably long enough, as the Pioneers are getting ready. I'm sure the Titans are ready. Both teams will meet at Park Center High tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. The pregame here on You Are There Sports will start at 6:30. The band is going to be there. Joel Poland will bring the group down and have everybody fired up. Again, it's a red out, so boy, dig anything you can that's red out of the closet. And wear to Park Center High tomorrow night for the Class 3A semifinals. It's Piers taking on Tri-City United, 11-0 versus 10-1 for the right to go to TCF Bank Stadium and the Prep Bowl. I'm looking forward to it. We'll see you at Park Center High tomorrow night. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And go Pioneers!